This is episode 12 of UFO Encounters. This week I'm reading from Robert Salas' book, UAPs and the Nuclear Puzzle, Visitations, National Security, and the Need for Transparency. When I have guests on my podcast, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. When reading these books, I always find such fascinating information that never makes it into the podcast, and here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record the extract from the book, and the author kindly said yes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So I'm going to be reading a couple of extracts from Chapter 6, which is titled The Stories of Others. And this is what Robert has written. Camp New Amsterdam, Netherlands, 1979, Josie Swinnenberg. In 1979, the US Air Force had an operational unit based at what they called Camp New Amsterdam. It was located at Soesterberg Air Force Base in the Netherlands near the town of Soesterberg. This unit, the 32nd Tactical Fighter Squadron, was assigned a tactical combat mission in support of NATO. In early 1979, the squadron began using the F-15 fighter aircraft. Some models of the F-15 were capable of carrying a tactical nuclear weapon. Nuclear weapons were stored on the base. On the afternoon of February 2nd, 1979, Josie Swinnenberg was riding her horse along an area known as the Lodersheide, about 5 kilometres, or about 3 miles, from the Soesterberg base. As she approached the highest point of this area, she brought her horse to a stop and looked out at a stand of trees about 750 metres away. That's about half a mile. There she saw an object silently hovering over the trees. She estimated the object was 30 to 50 metres in length. It was not an aircraft of any type she had ever seen. Living near Soesterberg, she had seen many different aircraft fly in and out of the base, but nothing like this object hovering above the trees. The object had many bright white lights interspaced with blue lights. The lights were so bright that she could not make out the exact shape of the craft. She sat on her horse, in awe of what she was seeing. The object made no noise and seemed to be perfectly still. She was amazed by the colour of the blue lights, saying it was the brightest blue she had ever seen. Though the lights were very bright, it did not hurt her eyes to look directly at them. She watched the object for a full 15 minutes, and noticed that it did not seem to be affected by gravity at all. It was perfectly motionless the entire time. She approached the object on horseback and kept it in view until she reached the trees. At that point, she stopped under the trees to try and look underneath the object. Then she was distracted by some rustling sounds coming from the brush in the forest. Her horse also reacted to the sounds. When she looked up again, the object was gone. This sighting turned out to be a prelude to what would occur the next day. On February 3rd, 1979, an object with 3 very bright white lights and 1 red light flew at an altitude of 150 to 200 metres and an average speed of 50 to 100 kilometres per hour over the flight line of the Soesterberg base. At times, it was seen to emit a beam of light to the ground. The object did not make a sound and was seen by many airmen at the base. The object twice flew along the flight line before departing at a high rate of speed. This was the summary of an investigative report by 3 members of the working group NBO-OVO, including Dr. W. de Graaf, who worked at the Astronomical Institute. There is more to Josie's story. In the summer of 2011, while on vacation in Ireland, Josie Swinnenberg was approached by a man who called himself Tom. She had never met this man before, but he soon told her about the details of her encounter with the UFO some 31 years earlier. Included in those details was the fact that she had heard sounds coming from the bushes during the encounter. This was a piece of information she had not told anyone, so there is no way anyone else could have known that unless they were there. He proceeded to tell her that they had been observing her since the incident in 1979. I point this out to emphasize the fact that witnesses are tracked by the cabal for long periods of time. How can this be? Would intelligence agencies really spend the money and manpower to track certain witnesses to UFO events? As the record of treatment of witnesses to the Roswell incident indicates, they would do exactly that if they thought the occurrence had enough significance to be problematic to their objectives of hiding the facts from the public. The obfuscation of facts of a significant incident may involve intimidation of witnesses through methods such as ridicule or the threat of ridicule, up to and including harsher methods such as physical threats. It is a testament to her courage that Josie has chosen to come forward with her story. And now we're on to another story. This is called Camp Slayer, Iraq, 2006. Mark Koch. On August 13, 2006, Sergeant First Class Mark Koch was the first sergeant with a platoon of 25 men at Radwanian Palace Complex, located southwest of Camp Slayer. At approximately 10 p.m, they were on a routine patrol through the town of Makasib and travelling north towards Baghdad International Airport. It is important to note that Mark and his platoon routinely took this route through the town of Makasib and had done so the previous day. On this night, his gunner radioed to stop the patrol. Mark told me in a 2006 interview, "We performed a security halt and dismounted the vehicles. This was normal procedure when someone spotted a situation that could be a danger to the platoon." The gunner said, "It's not on the ground, it's up here. Look up." I looked up, and what I thought I saw, it was something manufactured. It looked like landing lights propped on 1,000-foot-tall poles. We looked at it for 3 or 5 minutes. All 25 of us looked up. Then we put on our night vision goggles. It looked solid. You could not see the stars between the lights. It was triangular, with each side of the triangle equal in length. It had lights on only the leading edge, in the shape of a V. The lights were coloured white-orange, and there were about 4 to 5 lights on each side. The brightness of the lights looked muted, sort of milky white. One of the other men said, with the goggles on, you could see the reflection of the city lights underneath. I saw a smooth surface. There were no rivets, no seams, no exhaust ports, and no sound. It was totally silent. I did not think it was moving, but some of the other men said it was moving slowly. Each side was about 4 football fields in length, 1,200 feet. It was enormous. It basically covered the entire town of Makasib. My first thought was that this was some kind of observation platform the army had built. I thought that this platform had to be supported by poles. I thought to myself, how did they get those poles up so fast? We had been through here the previous night. But then I looked closer and realised there were no poles. After about 5 to 7 minutes, I decided we have to move to meet our next scheduled checkpoint. We went really fast through Makasib to get to the other side. It took us about 5 minutes. We were all anxious to get another look at this object from a distance. When we got to the fruit tree groves, we looked back and it was gone. I told the lieutenant I thought it would have been a mistake to report what we had seen. I told him that if we did report it, we'd be laughed at and probably lose our rank and chance of promotion. He agreed. When we got to the headquarters, I simply asked if anything was going on. They said no. However, they did not have direct communication with the air traffic control tower. So it is possible that people in the tower did see or have a record of the appearance of the object. Later, I met separately with the men in my platoon and told them that yes, we saw something bizarre, but I would not spread the story too much unless you want to get laughed at. Most of them agreed to keep it to themselves. However, since my separation from the service, I have talked to all the staff sergeants and 4 or 5 E5s and 6 or 7 privates and specialists at company reunions. They have not forgotten what they saw, and there remains a lot of interest in talking about it. This is the first time SFC Koch has discussed his story openly. He has contacted some of the other witnesses to this incident, although many of them are still on active duty. He anticipates that some of them will want to come forward also with more details. I too anticipate that more witnesses and details will come forth. Until then, This story is to be continued. So this week I was reading from Robert Salas's book. It's called UAPs and the Nuclear Puzzle: Visitations, National Security, and the Need for Transparency. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. A great way to support this podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcasts. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.